choices that we're making in our time, our generation, the choices that we make in terms of technology and religion, in terms of science, in medicine, for the first time in recorded human history, these choices carry consequences that we cannot undo. Always in the past, if a generation made a choice that did not serve them well, they would simply say, well, we won't do that again. We can no longer do that. When we talk about changing the genetic code of a species, when we speak about the implications of nuclear technologies, the evolution of our bodies, the DNA in our bodies, for example, it has taken hundreds and thousands of years for us to arrive at what is called the genetic recipe that allows us to work however well we believe we work in our world. What are the implications if we, in one generation, intercede and change that genetic recipe in response to a single threat? For example, there is a proposal that we change our genetic code to make us immune to the anthrax virus because it appears to be a threat in this generation right now. And I believe we can probably do this. However, what are the long-term implications? Do we really know what it means to us if 30 years from now another virus comes into our populations? By making that change now, have we somehow compromised the wisdom and the intelligence of our body to take care of us in another generation? And the truth is, the best scientists of our time will tell us we really don't know the answer to that. We really don't know. The evolution of our bodies, the stability of nations, the peace of our world literally hang in the balance of the choices that we're making in the single generation, keys to our very survival right now. So we can say, without exaggeration, that for the first time in recorded human history, we have at our fingertips the power to preserve or to destroy all that we cherish as a species. And that is an awesome, awesome power for us to have. And there's a tremendous responsibility that comes with us understanding that kind of power. The great irony of our time in history is that in the presence of such power that gives us what appear to be miraculous technologies, on the one hand, children are still orphaned, families destroyed from preventable disease, from malnutrition, from viral epidemics that sweep seemingly unchallenged across entire continents. With the knowledge of peace and how to create peace available to the largest populations ever recorded in our planet's history, we still witness the horrors of war, induced famine, senseless acts of hate, and we have to ask ourselves the question, why? Why are these things happening simultaneously? How can we have such wisdom when it comes to understanding the world around us on the one hand, and on the other hand, why does it appear that we lack the wisdom to apply what we know to end the suffering and to make the lives of our families and our communities and our global family that much better? Well, perhaps one of the answers to this question may come from a term that astronomer Carl Sagan coined before his death in 1996. Before he died, Sagan looked at our time in history and he looked at the uniqueness of the things that we're identifying right now. And what he said was, he said, we are in fact living a very unique time of history. It's a time that he called technological adolescence. Technological adolescence, what a fascinating term. It's a term that implies there's something young about our understanding. What Sagan began to understand was that we as a species have reached a time where we have acquired the powers of creation, where we can tap into the forces of the universe on the one hand, and on the other hand, we are still learning the maturity and the wisdom of what it means to use that power responsibly in our lives. Sagan's question before he died was, will we survive our learning curve? Will we learn quick enough to gain the wisdom to survive the powers that we now have at our fingertips? One of our visionaries and one of the brilliant scientists of our time, Dr. Michio Kaku, co-author of the superstring theory, coined a beautiful quote a few years ago. He said, for most of human history, we could only watch the beautiful dance of nature. He said, but today we're on the cusp of an epic-making transition from being what he called passive observers of nature to being active choreographers. If we are, in fact, the choreographers of technology and nature, as Michio Kaku suggests, then it gives even greater credibility to what Carl Sagan said about our time of technological adolescence. Is it possible that technology has grown faster in some respects than the wisdom of how we apply it in our lives? I invite you as a listener, just think about what has happened even in the last 50 years, the ability to engineer our genes, the way that we can now manipulate viruses and bacteria, nuclear energy, what it means to us and how we apply it in our lives. Do you ever get the feeling somehow that we've learned these things faster than we learn how to apply them or what they mean in our lives? Well, we have to ask ourselves, do we truly understand how these choices affect our world? Do we really know what they mean? Do we really have the wisdom to apply our newfound powers wisely in our world? I found some very interesting statistics. 100 years ago, our world was way different than it is today. 100 years ago, most women washed their hair only once a month. Taking notes already. Am I about to say anything profound? This is it. And when they did wash their hair, they used borax and egg yolks for shampoo. Only 100 years ago. 100 years ago, in this country, there were only 144 miles of paved road. Can you believe that? 144 miles. How many automobiles do you think were available to drive on those 144 miles? 8,000. 8,000 cars to drive on them. We now have the ability to modify our weather patterns in ways that we've never done before. Many people are unaware of this. People say, do you mean seed the clouds to create rain? Well, yes, we do that. We also have the ability to create high-pressure systems wherever we would like to have them, low-pressure systems to move masses of weather around. We can prevent droughts when we do that. We can bring life-giving water to portions of the earth that have never had water. Is it right, wrong, good, or bad? We don't know right now. We don't know. To create new forms of matter that have never been seen in this world before. When we take the elements of the earth that occur naturally and we force them together under artificial temperatures and pressures, in the ancient texts, they call that the perversion of matter. They say because it would never happen under natural circumstances. Is it right, wrong, good, or bad? What are we saying to our world, and what are we doing to our world when we do this? And when we engineer brand new forms of life, we now are tinkering with the ancient code that has brought life to our world in ways we know how to do. We may not understand the implications of what these things are actually leaving us. All of these are powers historically that have only been left what we call the force of God and the power of nature. There are questions now. There are scientists who are asking, if we now have the powers that have been historically left to God and nature, are we becoming gods ourselves? Many people are speculating about that. Our choices today, we are setting the standards of technology, religion, medicine. These are the choices today that have the lasting consequences, consequences that are forever going to be felt in the evolution of our bodies, the stability of our nations, and the peace of our world. Do you feel that? Do you feel that we are being asked to make choices today? The magnitude of those choices, unlike anything we've ever known in the past. When you watch the 6 o'clock news, do you ever feel that? Do you ever feel like we don't have all the information? As good as the information is, it may be something is missing. I feel that way. These are the keys to the survival of our species, nothing less. And that is why I am so passionate and absolutely thrilled to be able to share this with you today, because in a very real sense, this is precisely what all of this work is about. We're talking about nothing less than the survival of humankind.